WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Hello, and welcome to WrestleSpective Radio at FairToFlare.com. This is Jason Mann, and joining me once again, one of my favorite guests, Joe Drilling. Joe, how you doing?
I'm great. I've been elevated to one of the favorite guests. That makes me feel good.
You've been really hitting the Fair to Flare family lately. You've been on International Object, and you've been on the wrestling podcast, so you've almost hit for the cycle. You just need to get kick out wrestling if Razor gets back into that, and then you'll be good to go.
Yeah, there you go. So I should do that. And I've finally started my own wrestling podcast because of all this. So.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear that.
So, So what are we talking about here?
We are talking about the main event of Hardcore Heaven 2000 ECW show and the main event, scintillating main event of the ECW champion Just Incredible against Lance Storm, the Battle of the Impact Players.
That's right. That's right.
So you picked this match out of a list of many main events. And what? Why did this stand out to you?
Well, I was there for starters. This match was took place live at the Eagles Ballroom in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which is interesting because everything that I'm looking at online to sort of refresh myself with kind of the whole card here is telling me that it took place at the Rave. And that's so there's a building right across the street from the hotel where Jeffrey Dahmer lived. Fun fact that is home to several venues altogether, and most people just refer to it as the Rave, but the upstairs part, the big venue, is the Eagles Ballroom, and that's where the wrestling always takes place. So the Rave is the downstairs part, where sort of mid-sized concerts take place, and the upstairs were the big, like I saw Morrissey upstairs, I've seen the Dropkick Murphys upstairs, and I've seen ECW twice, actually, once for a Hardcore TV or whatever it was called, ECW on TNN, I guess it was, taping a couple months after this. And for this, and I also saw a Juggalo Championship Wrestling show at that venue because a friend of mine got free tickets, and she was, this girl was dating a friend of mine, and she was like, hey, I got 4 free tickets to this weird ICP wrestling show tonight. Do you want to go? And a couple, myself and the two of them and another friend of mine, we were like, yeah, fuck it. Like, it's wrestling. Let's do it.
Yeah.
And that show was actually not as bad as you might expect, although the main event was involved ICP wrestling in a cage match, which is not, it was not, not good. But we're not here to talk about that show. That's a different story for a different day.
Indeed.
I was at this show. This was, May 14th of 2000. So I was a junior in high school. I was just at the tail end of my junior year of high school. And I was just balls deep in wrestling fandom at this point. Actually, not a lot has changed, really. I loved professional wrestling and video games, and I still love professional wrestling and video games. So I guess not, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. But I was 17, and man, I was super excited that ECW was having a pay-per-view in Milwaukee. Of course, as we know, ECW, as we knew it then, would be gone within less than a year from this point, but we didn't know that at the time. And it was super awesome to have ECW doing a pay-per-view, you know, here in Milwaukee. So I was sitting in the balcony, in the front row of the balcony, which is interesting because both of the pay-per-views that I've been to live here in Milwaukee, I was sitting in the front row of the balcony. So, or of the upper level, I guess, in the other case. But so yeah, I was a big ECW fan. I mean, I was a big wrestling fan. I mean, this was the late 90s into the early 2000s. You're talking about, like, you know, I would have people over at my house for WWF pay-per-views, and my my friend Jeremy, who I went to this pay-per-view with, he would have people over for the WCW pay-per-views, and we would switch off on the ECW pay-per-view, so neither one of our moms got too angry with us. Mm-hmm. And ECW pay-per-views, for most of the time, were only every other month. I think they started doing monthly at the very end. But generally speaking, they ran every other month on pay-per-view, which was probably a good idea. And actually, I wouldn't mind seeing a return to that form, even from WWE at this point. But I was there, and it was pretty sweet. And I also was a big Just Incredible fan, and I still like Just Incredible. I watched this match, and honestly, I still liked it. I thought it was a good match. Okay. And I think Just Incredible is, I mean, it was a little brief, and there's some weird wrestling logic shit as far as like why things go the way they go. And I will say it was a huge disappointment. So to frame this thing, basically what had happened is Just Incredible and Lance Storm were tag team partners. They were the Impact players. Right. And Storm was on his way out. This was his last ECW match before he showed up in WCW. And he got well to get and was good, apparently, as it turned out. Oh, he ended up in WCW, so at least he was making some money, though. Right. But, you know, so basically what happened is when Just Incredible won the ECW World Heavyweight Championship, he threw the tag team titles in the garbage. And so this is one of those wrestling logic things. I don't really understand why you would throw, like, most guys, when you see guys win multiple titles, they start wearing them, like, you know, you would have guys wear one on each shoulder, like Jericho did with the Undisputed title. I mean, he had the WCW, the big gold belt, and the WWF title. Or you would see one guy, you know, they would wear it around their waist and then one over their arm. Or like you see Ultimo Dragon pictures from like the late 90s when he's got like four titles or five titles or six titles and he's holding, there's lined up on his arms. But for some reason, Just Incredible decided, man, fuck this title. I don't want this anymore. Which is not something that I'm a big fan of, generally speaking. I think that kind of makes it look like the tag team titles don't mean anything, you know.
Right.
And he was portraying, you know, he was a dick, right? So being a dick, he was like, well, I just, you know, fuck you, Lance Storm, and whatever. And he throws the title away. But it doesn't make a lot of sense. But anyways, of course, Lance Storm took exception to that because now he has no titles because the titles were thrown out for some reason. So that's the thing. But then the thing that was really disappointing as a fan being there live is this was billed as a three-way dance with Tommy Dreamer.
Right.
And then Tommy Dreamer got hurt. So rather than, of course, in a lot of cases, which is weird, Paul Heyman would just come out. He would come out before the pay-per-view or he would whatever, and he would say, like, one of these guys is hurt or one of these guys didn't show up or whatever, so this is what we're going to do. But in this case, he actually didn't do that. He had Just Incredible come out and cut a promo before the match. Now, the version that you watched, did you see the promo?
Yes.
Okay. So he comes out and he cuts this promo about, you know, I've got unfinished business with Lance Storm, and if anybody besides Lance Storm comes out to this ring, I will throw this World Heavyweight title in the garbage too. Which, again...
Yeah, I was confused by that.
If we look at the history of the WCW, so listeners can go back and listen to us talk about the main event at Starrcade 2000, and you can see that vacating the title is not something that doesn't ever happen in professional wrestling. Like, if he threw it away, like, so Paul Heyman would be like, okay, vacant champion, we'll have a tournament, you know what I mean? Like that. So I don't really get that. This whole promo thing is the wrestling logic part of it that I don't really get. And it was, again, really disappointing as a fan to be there and, you know, be like, I'm super excited to see this, and now I don't get to see the advertised match, which was a three-way dance. So obviously, nobody wants Dreamer to wrestle hurt, but, you know, it's still a bummer.
Sure.
So the match becomes a one-on-one match, which is a good send-off because they had been tag team partners, and I believe Lance Storm trained Just Incredible. They say that during the match, and I didn't recall that. I'm not sure if that's true or if that's just...
I think I've seen that mentioned elsewhere, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that is true. And away we go. So eventually they make it look like Dreamer wants to get in there, and he's pissed off that, no, I'm not. I'm going to come in there and wrestle. I shouldn't be taken out of this match. And basically Paul Heyman convinces him to be the company man and, you know, stand down.
Right. Yeah. And he, you know, shakes, even like sort of he and Storm stare down for a little bit. And then, you know, Heyman, they shake hands. It's like, okay, well, Dreamer, I can't be here, but Storm, you win it from this guy. And Heyman keeps saying that he has us by the balls, which I guess the circumstances of them being so afraid he's going to throw this title in the trash, like it would be some sort of like horrible circumstance. And they treated that ECW title with some reverence. So they wanted to make it seem like it was this holy thing, unlike, you know, what the WCW title had become for
right,
their company.
Right.
So I get that, I guess, but it's sort of strange. And I guess I don't really see Credible's motivations weren't really very clear on this. One thing that we should mention is that Credible won the title from Dreamer.
From Dreamer, right? Yeah. Dreamer was getting his rematch. Essentially,
right.
Here.
Yeah. The circumstance was, fast forward or rewind to the early part of 2000, late 99, and we have Mike Awesome and Masato Tanaka having these really very, very violent, physical, brutal, insane matches for these two heavyweights to just kind of be throwing each other around and hitting each other with 1,000 chair shots, incredibly stiff. But having these matches that really were well received at the time by the ECW fan base and were really, and were state of the art in a certain sense, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mike Awesome gets an offer from WCW and appears on Nitro before losing the ECW title, and he ends up losing it to Taz, who was working for WWE at the time.
Yeah.
And the kind of the idea being the novelty of the WWE guy beating the WCW guy in an ECW ring. And so then Taz loses it a few weeks later to Dreamer. And then I guess Credible challenges Dreamer in an impromptu thing right away afterward and then beats him. So Dreamer never ever gets to actually hold the belt. And then for people who don't know, Dreamer is like this, he's basically like the number one, not necessarily like the top guy in ECW, but he's sort of like the heart and soul kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's the guy who, the fans at this point love. He's sort of like, I'm trying to think of a parallel example in WWE now of a guy who's just sort of been around forever and isn't a guy who's necessarily like Michaels, not like the in-ring ability, obviously, but as far as like Michaels being a guy who was around for a long time and during the 2000s really wasn't champion. He had the brief run, but really he was kind of in the title picture, but never really held the title.
Right.
Wasn't like the top guy, but was still like, the legend, essentially,
Right, yeah. Or almost the Undertaker. I mean,
right.
The Undertaker's had title runs, but I mean, really, there's no need to ever put the title on the Undertaker. I don't think there was a need. Probably the last couple times that he had the title, that was probably unnecessary for the Undertaker. I mean, because the Undertaker is the Undertaker. He's the goddamn Undertaker. Like, you
right.
don't need to put the title on him, because whether he's the champion or not, if you go, the Undertaker will be on this show, people will buy tickets to see the Undertaker.
Sure.
And he's been in WWE forever. And they're even trying to kind of push that thing now where it's like, it's the end of an era, like with the Triple H and Undertaker rematch at WrestleMania, which that's sort of wrestling logic there. But I mean, really, if you look, the Undertaker has been there, longer than anybody at this point. He's been there for 22 years without going to another company, without wrestling a match for anybody but Vince. Since 1990, he has been in the WWE. And that was the way it was with Dreamer. Dreamer was a ECW guy until the day they closed the doors on ECW. He was an ECW guy.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, people popped for him just because he was Tommy Dreamer, just because he had that loyalty and the fans could see it. And he has that passion for wrestling. As you can see it in him. You can hear it. Colt Cabana did an Art of Wrestling podcast with him about a month or two ago. That was fantastic. I love Tommy Dreamer too.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's, again, as an ECW fan, getting to see ECW live for the first time and on pay-per-view, a live pay-per-view in my hometown, Tommy Dreamer in the main event with the Impact players, who I also was a big fan of, that was kind of a bummer to be like, no Tommy Dreamer.
Sure. So okay, you mentioned that you're a big fan of Just Incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Please explain.
Okay, see, I knew you were going to say that. Everybody, like, there is this thing where people just hate on Just Incredible.
I don't want to say that I hate on Just Incredible. I want to say that I think Just Incredible is about as average a professional wrestler in most respects as you could possibly be, which is not an insult, because being average is better than being bad. But I just kind of find everything about Just Incredible to be very average.
I would say, see, I don't know, like that scale of what is average, I feel like is changing for the worse with WWE. They bring in so many guys who are still green. They bring guys up from Florida Championship who don't really know what they're doing. The first time they brought up Brodus Clay, it was a train wreck. Most of those NXT guys were train wrecks, except for, you know, Barrett and Danielson for the most part. You know, they just... And so I think that sliding scale of average is kind of changing. But I can see what you're saying. I don't know. Something about the age I was when he started, when he became the guy in ECW or one of those big guys, he consistently had solid matches. Like, I'm not saying he's Shawn Michaels. I'm not saying he's not in my top 5 or my top 10 or my top 20 probably. But I like him. I like his work. I was happy when they brought him back in the reboot of ECW. I was sad when they started kind of jobbing him out, especially since they brought CM Punk's first televised match was against Just Incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And it really felt like Just Incredible was capable enough and enough of a veteran and had probably had enough work with CM Punk and in Ring of Honor and stuff like that, where they could have drawn that out into a decent TV feud to build up Punk as beating, you know, being able to go up against this sort of crafty ECW veteran, ECW original. And they just kind of blew it. The whole X Factor thing was a train wreck, and I don't really want to revisit that, which is strange because all three of the guys, I like all three of the guys who were involved in X Factor, but that was just a booking nightmare, and I don't think the bookers ever cared about X-Pac at that point, about X-Pac or Just Incredible or Albert, you know, by then. But I think he's solid. His character, just his you know, he was brash, he was arrogant, he talked a lot of shit. You know, he had those qualities that as a 17-year-old wrestling fan, I liked. You know, he took the Sandman's cane and he beat Dreamer for the title, and him and Storm had, you know, great matches as a tag team, whether you want to credit that more to Lance Storm or not, you know, I guess whatever.
Mm.
I guess, you know, it's hard for me to refute, like, maybe he is only a little bit above average or average, but I like the character. He didn't sound ridiculous on the microphone. He had enough charisma that he could talk a decent promo and sound not awful. Because, I mean, even now, WWE puts the microphone in the hands of people who don't sound convincing, don't sound like they mean what they say. John Laurinaitis is the worst example of that. And the worst thing is he's in a role where he only talks. And I get that, like, there's a certain segment of the audience that is kind of gravitating to him for that. But, like, literally, the man cannot act. I don't believe anything he says. He stumbles over his words. He is terrible, you know. And they do that with guys. They put microphones in the hands of these guys. And I just don't get it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think Credible could cut a decent promo. He could work a decent match. He would never, you know, you don't see a lot of blown spots, a lot of missed things. The crowd chants, we gotta, hang on 1 second. I need to deal with this dog situation.
Sure, no problem.
I'm sorry about that. You can edit that out.
No problem.
I don't know what he is seeing or hearing out there that is causing him to get all riled up, mm-hmm. but it's obnoxious. Anyways, you know, we get a UF'd up chant from the crowd at one point for, I think, like a phantom drop kick or something. Which, I mean, that was the ECW crowd through and through, right? That was the...
Right.
There's like a million chants, and the video I watched wasn't high enough quality for me to understand all of them. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I was taking part in all of them. you know, even the UF dub chant, which is embarrassing now, but like I was 17. Like, cut me some slack.
All right.
I liked both of these guys, so I was excited to see the match. The rest of the card actually is kind of eh. Like, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't great.
Sure. Jerry Lynn gets his first win over RVD. That's kind of the big would be kind of the other big thing.
Yeah, right. That match, if we're being honest, that match probably should have been the main event. That match was awesome. Mm-hmm. That match was awesome. And again, I like at this point, I've gotten to the point with Rob Van Dam where I feel like watching anything he does in TNA, he's one of the best of the veteran guys that they have, veteran old guys that they've got. He's probably the most capable out of, you know, the Hogans and the Bubba Ray Dudleys and the whatever. But it's I just feel like everything he does now is phoned in. Like, he's just going through the motions. And like at this point, if you've seen one RVD match in the last 4 years, you've probably seen them all.
Yeah, it might even go back further than that, but we'll think of it.
But 12 years ago, you know, that wasn't the case, and mm-hmm. especially with Jerry Lynn, you know, I mean, he was on fire, and that match is like a 20-minute match, and it's really great. Mm-hmm. But this match, starts with this promo, and man, there's a lot of swearing in this promo. And that doesn't offend me, obviously, because I've already sworn like 18 times since we started this podcast. Mm-hmm. But that's weird. Like, I get it. Like, ECW is the cool, edgy, and I'm sure I loved it when I was 17. You know, that he said, like, you know, he pulled out practically every swear in the book.
Right.
But like wrestling shows, I'm not against it if it means something. Like, if you drop an F-bomb for a reason. But man. He swears a lot, and Heyman is swearing, and Dreamer is swearing and giving the finger, and everybody except Lance Storm is swearing, and that's because Lance Storm isn't talking. Like,
right. Like, yeah, I get what you're saying. Like, I think, like, less is more with stuff like that. And you know, excessive violence. And I kind of feel the same way, like, in movies and in kind of any kind of entertainment. I mean, there are obviously, you know, pieces of art where, you know, like Deadwood, for example, like Deadwood wouldn't be Deadwood if it weren't for, you know, the language that they use. But, you know, it's used, A, it's kind of poetic, and B, it's realistic how they speak, you know, where in wrestling, you can create your own world. You know, I don't have an objection to cursing either, but I didn't really think of it as being necessarily that excessive, although I didn't really, the audio in mine wasn't the best, so I couldn't hear exactly everything that he was saying. Mm. But yeah, I do think that less is more when it comes to that.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, it was just so, there was so much of it. Like, I was just like, wow, that it just felt, you know, it felt like, you know, it felt like a teenager who just learned how to swear and wanted to sound cool.
Right. Exactly. You know? Exactly.
But right when they get into the match, I think things pick up pretty quick. It's a good, I mean, these guys are two guys who at this point are not liking each other, you know, right. So they're jumping on each other immediately, mm-hmm. Which is great. Cause I don't like to see, like, there's a lot of bad blood here. These guys are definitely wanting to tear each other's faces off. And then they lock up and I'm like, yeah, that's what I do when I want to tear someone's face off. I lock up with them.
Right.
So it's good to see that they get right into it.
Yeah.
And I mean, they go, and then other thing that I liked about this match, which I mean, my memories of this match live are very hazy at best. Cause again, we're talking 12 years ago.
Sure.
For an ECW match, for what I think most people think of, especially talking about the feud that Mike Awesome and Masato Tanaka had, this is not like, first of all, there's no blood. No one bleeds at all. Not a drop. There's only one real, like, there's a cane. There's one shot with the Singapore cane, which is after the match is over. And there's a table. Credible goes through a table, and that's right. It. Like, there's not like 17 different implements being used. There's no staple guns or nothing gets lit on fire or barbed wire. There's none of that. Like, it's, they just have a wrestling match for the most part.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I would say it's a solid wrestling match. It's pretty good. I mean, there's it didn't really draw me in, but it was short enough that you know, it felt like it was a, you know, good athletic showcase. But it, I don't know if it did much more than that. But if I had been more invested in the story, perhaps I would. You know, that might have changed as well. You know, it's I was not a guy. You know, I watched ECW occasionally, but I didn't really get it on TV much pre-TNN.
Right. Me neither. It was hard for me to see it, but yeah. I was a big fan. I watched all the pay-per-views even when I couldn't see it on TV.
I didn't get it. I'm not sure if we had it available where I was or if I just wasn't that interested. You know, I mean, I read about it. I knew the characters. You know, I mean, I knew basically what was going on, but, you know, I didn't watch it. Just never – ECW just didn't connect with me like it does with a lot of other people for whatever reason. I guess WWF and WCW were enough for me. I didn't really need that. And especially when in 98, 99, 2000, I mean, but by then WWE and WCW had evolved and taken a lot of the elements and a lot of the best talent that ECW had. So It wasn't as, you know, if I had started watching ECW 95, 96, I might have a different impression of it. But
yeah, no, but even at this point, like, I think that their image was sort of changing in terms of, also we were talking about, you know, there's the garbage wrestling and there was this stuff, but I think by this time, you know, they were having a lot more technical matches. I mean, on this card, we still have New Jack beating up one of the Baldies, which was sort of like what he did, but you also have like Chris Chetty and Nova having matches, and you have Danny Doring in there and Kid Cash and Lula Guido and
Tajiri, you know, that
Tajiri
had a lot of good
Carino.
Stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you still have guys that in a different way than maybe what a lot of people think of when they think of old school ECW, you know, but they're definitely talented guys who could have good matches. So.
Sure. Sure. I just mean that ECW was still, they still had a lot of strong points and it was still a good promotion in a lot of ways, but it certainly wasn't as revolutionary as it was in 95. I mean, that revolution had been kind of co-opted by, you know, mostly by WWE.
Right.
To a certain extent. Yeah.
I would say that I definitely preferred to watch ECW at this point than WCW. By far.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. WCW was pretty much awful, but May of 2000, yeah, that had really fallen by then. But WWE had its strongest year in 2000. I mean, and really just was shining all over the place and had a lot of variety. So it really, you know, was doing a lot. I wanted to mention that Credible has Francine with him, who strokes a kendo stick suggestively.
Very suggestively. She's giving that kendo stick a hand job. There's no way around that.
She is. Yes. For a long time, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, multiple times. So that.
Extensively.
That, like,
her whole thing at that point was essentially she went where the belt went. And actually, that turned into a pretty creative and decent angle, storyline, where towards the end of 2000, the Sandman stole Justin Credible's belt.
Okay.
No, I'm sorry. It was by that time it was Steve Carino's belt. Steve Carino had won the belt in a double Jeopardy match, which was like some weird contrived thing. But Jerry Lynn had it. Carino won it from him, but then the Sandman just took it. And he was carrying the ECW title even though he wasn't the ECW champion.
Sure.
And the whole thing was that Francine was going to go wherever the title was, but not with the Sandman, because gross, he's the Sandman. But she essentially had would not sleep with Justin Credible, which it was obviously heavily implied. It wasn't even implied. It was outright stated that she was not only his valet, but she was sleeping with him. But she only slept with champions. And so even she wouldn't sleep with Carino and she wouldn't sleep with Justin, because even though Carino was the champion or Justin had been the champion or was the number one contender, he didn't have the belt. So there's this whole thing where then going into Guilty as Charged, the last ECW pay-per-view in 2001, they both not only wanted the title to have the title, but also to have sex with Francine.
Okay.
Which is, Francine is obviously portrayed as a gold bricker, and we can tie that into what's going on WWF right now. It worked for her. She was a heel character. It worked well for her. She was portrayed as being very shrewd and being very power hungry, and it was working for her. And she also assisted her, as you see in this match, she did everything to make sure that Justin kept the title.
Sure.
You know, at every turn.
Now Francine mostly before this had been with Shane Douglas for for years before this, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so she'd been around for a while.
But he was in WCW at this time.
Right.
And she wasn't invited to that party, apparently, I guess. Right.
Yeah, I don't think she really had a major league look.
No. She actually looks delightfully trashy. I will say that. Okay. She has a look where she just looks... She looks like the kind of... I can't... It's hard for me to even describe it. Like, she looks trashy... But she looks trashy in a way where she's aspiring to be classy, which I think works with her character.
Okay.
I don't know if she...
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't even know if she really looks that way. Like, I've never seen her not, like, in full character, like, looking trashy as hell.
Sure.
So maybe if she does herself up and you know, does her makeup in a less trashy way and has her hair, like, less frizzy and trashy looking, maybe she looks not that way.
Right.
But she just looks super, like totally trashy, like... Yeah. Ready to take a shortcut at any moment, ready to do whatever she can to have the money and the power, whoever that means sleeping with or whatever, like cheating and matches that means, like, and I think it worked by and large. Of course, I mean, she was not a good wrestler by any stretch of the imagination,
right.
In spite of the fact that they did put her in a wrestling ring at from time to time.
Sure. But I mean, mostly she just did catfight stuff, right? I mean, that was
right.
Kind of the...
Yeah. Right.
Now she's wearing like, she's in white, she had like kind of like a white top and then like sort of like a feathery tail like thing almost.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, I don't but it fits with your description of her look. I hadn't thought of it that way, but that's a good way of putting it. And then Dawn Marie, who is Storm's manager, she is in a black top and a short skirt and her belly is exposed. I found it interesting that that white is with Credible, the bad guy, and then black is with Storm, you know, ostensibly the good guy. Now, was Storm really a good guy, or what? I mean, had he turned face, or was he more just like...
He was kind of face by default because he'd been screwed over by Credible, but they were pretty heavily heels throughout their ECW run.
Right.
He wasn't really, I mean, he wasn't wearing a white hat. I mean, the idea was going to be that Dreamer was the baby face,
right?
You know?
And Storm was kind of in between it. And so and I guess the beginning, Dreamer almost gives his endorsement to Storm with a handshake and then, you know, go get him kind of thing.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. So,
okay.
You know, he was sort of face by,
right.
Face by default.
While I'm mentioning outfits, I will mention that Just Incredible's look, which may be one of the reasons why I'm not particularly that fond of him, is jorts and black leggings.
He didn't always wear the black tights under his jorts. I don't know what I'm not sure what the reasoning is behind the tights under the jorts. I was never a fan of that particular look,
right.
Especially since so many other wrestlers have worn jorts and not worn long tights under them.
Right.
I mean, John Cena wears jorts. Raven wore jorts before wearing a kilt, which he's Jewish. I don't know why he's wearing a kilt.
Well, they're probably Jewish Scotsmen.
But he's not one of them.
All right. Well,
you know. Jorts are not. Balls Mahoney wore jorts. You
sure.
know, like that's not a thing that I even wore jorts at the beginning of my indie career before I started doing my Joey Pink gimmick. I wore jorts, but I did not wear long tights under them, and I never understood what was going on there.
Okay. Well, yeah, not a good look. Not a good look then, but certainly not aged well. So
no, definitely.
So beginning of this match, you mentioned it starts pretty fast. They a bit of a stare down, but then they trade blows right away. Storm gets a takedown. Credible bails outside the ring and keeps trying to get in, but then Storm meets him on the apron with blows. Back in the ring, Incredible takes like a Shawn Michaels flip bump over the turnbuckle. Storm follows with a drop kick, and then Storm tries to dive to the outside, but then ends up Incredible sort of dodges out of the way, and then he lands on the floor.
Yeah, we whacked him in the head with the kendo stick.
Oh, okay.
On the way down.
Okay, yeah, so. he kind of more grazed him on that. I couldn't exactly see what happened there, but that's right.
Yeah,
he does hit him with the cane. One thing I will say And it's weird because I haven't seen that much ECW with Lance Storm, but I've seen this match, and I also saw, I think it's Heatwave 98 with him and Candido.
Yeah, that's a good match.
Well, okay, the thing about that match is Candido has like an ear injury, and Storm absolutely does nothing to attack the ear the entire match. Like,
I think you should rewatch that, because he rips the headgear off of him and punches him in the ear.
I swear that he does not. I swear. I mean, I'll watch it again, but I swear that, like, I remember very specifically, like, watching that match and noticing, like, nothing going on with the ear. But we'll pass that and for okay. now. But but and then in this match, there's not really major issues with psychology, but the one thing is that after that dive, like, they're trading chops and strikes outside, like, 10 seconds later, like, Storm, like, has no, you know, was not affected by spilling outside of the ring and landing on the floor hardly at all. I'm not, like, you know, I don't want – the thing about this is, like, Lance Storm is a guy who, you know, is does a lot of podcasts on Figure Four and stuff, and is, you know, pretty, has his own commentary, and is a guy who talks a lot about wrestling psychology and has knowledge of it. And, you know, so I'm, when things like that happen in matches that I see, it throws me off so much more because, you know.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And yeah, that was, to be fair, that was sort of the ECW style at the time. 'Cause if you notice, when Credible goes through the table, he doesn't really sell it as long as you would expect. Like a WWE guy now, if he went to leap on the outside and got whacked in the head with the kendo stick, or even grazed with it and the announcers put it over as getting whacked square in the head, he would sell it for a long time. But in ECW, I mean, again, we talked about, you know, Awesome and Tanaka were having those matches where, like, literally one of them would get blasted in the head with, like, seven chair shots. And not like there's one, I've got one where literally Misato Tanaka stands there and takes a full dead-on unprotected headshot from a chair from Mike Awesome, and then just looks at him and challenges him to do it again, and he does it again, and then he, like, hulks up, like, you know what I mean? So that was sort of the ECW, like, the things that we think of in terms of what we expect to see in WWE or, you know, more mainstream wrestling psychology, those weapons, those dives to the outside, things that we think of as causing a lot of damage, don't tend to have the same effect in ECW.
Okay. Well, I guess, you know, if you're consistent in that within the promotion, I can accept that. Although obviously I feel like those big moves should really have more, you know, I obviously prefer a style in which those big moves have more of an impact.
And, I agree. Yeah. I tend to agree.
Right. Anyway, so Credible wins a slugfest outside, then brings a Storm in. He grabs a table on the outside and places it on the ramp, which takes quite a long time. Storm ends up getting up and grabbing them, bringing them in. They trade chops in the corner to a chorus of woos. And then one nice little thing I thought is that Storm does a charge, runs into a boot, and I like how he has, like, instead of just falling randomly, he sort of does, like, a nice, like, little stagger and wobble and tumbles in the middle of the ring. And I like it when I see guys, like, when somebody bumps the same way every time or takes a fall the same way every time, obviously it just kind of gets repetitive because, you know, it's nice to just add, like, a little variation on that just to give it, like, kind of a different flavor.
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah, absolutely.
And then another cool thing, and this is one thing that impressed me that Credible did, was Credible did the whole, like, you know, like, Storm is grabbing the ropes and he pulls his legs and lifts him up. And usually just, like, he lifts him up by the legs and then the guy drops. That's always a cool thing. But he lifted him up and then caught him in the power bomb. And I think it was a sit-out power bomb. And got a near fall on that. I thought that was really cool.
I'm a big fan of the corner power bomb from Justin Credible.
It was, so like that was a normal thing he did?
Yeah. Yep,
oh, okay.
Yeah, that was one of his signature maneuvers.
Okay. Absolutely. I didn't realize that. So, that's nifty. And then we get big, we want Dreamer chance. And, then they go to what I call an extreme chin lock, for a decent amount of time.
Yeah.
And then Storm fights out of it. He gets a sunset flip for two, but then Credible cuts him off with the clothesline. Then they do more trading chops and slaps for a while, but then Credible gets a thumb to the eye. Good old thumb to the eye. Mm-hmm. Always a good tactic. And then we get another extreme chin lock for a while. and I noticed that Dawn Marie is very, very jubilant as a cheerleader. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's I mean, not you know, usually you get babyface manager to do that. But she even seems to go the extra mile in that. And for Dawn Marie, not someone I've really ever – I mean, I don't have any problem with Dawn Marie, but Dawn Marie's never really, like, stood out to me as being particularly, you know, noteworthy in anything. And this, that was something that I took note of.
Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts on Dawn Marie?
She's married to Simon Diamond, I guess. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't really know. Dawn Marie is not the only thing that sticks out, like, for all this stuff. So she's, I mean, as you said, in this particular match, she's good as a cheerleader. She takes a hell of a bump on the Tombstone Piledriver. That's incredible. The only thing that ever sticks out in my mind about Dawn Marie, and will be the only thing that I think of when I think of Dawn Marie for the rest of my life, is the, that whole angle they did in WWE, that whole ill-advised angle where she was banging Tori Wilson's dad.
Right.
And then he had a heart attack while they were having sex or something. And I just – that I. Whenever anybody talks about Dawn Marie, that's the first thing that I think of is okay. the Al Wilson angle.
Yeah. And she got fired when she was pregnant and from WWE, I believe.
Yes, that's true. She got fired when she was pregnant, which is a big no-no. you're not really supposed to do that. That's really considered discrimination. Yeah. I believe she did win a lawsuit against them for firing her while she was pregnant.
Ah, and well, was good for her.
Received a sum of money, I believe.
Yeah.
I would have to double-check that, but I know that. She's also not the first or last woman to do that. So.
Yeah. Well. So eventually the crowd wills Storm to get up, and he gets a Hurricane Rana, but then is too tired to follow up for it. Another cool spot where Storm is whipped into the corner, but then he jumps onto the turnbuckle and then hits a back elbow for two. Mm-hmm. And then a nice standing dropkick follows also for two. So Storm definitely does some of the babyface aerial stuff here that mm-hmm. Like, you know, I'm sure, you know, some of like the, you know, Smoky Mountain matches that he had, you know, I've seen him do it there. But as, you know, since he spent really most of his career as a heel, not something I'm used to seeing out of him.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, again, at this point, he was sort of not, he was the de facto babyface.
Right. I mean, he's playing in this match, whether it's really fits his character. And definitely in this match, he is kind of amping that up a little bit.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that I really like about Lance Storm. He's very sound as a ground technician. He's very sound as an aerial artist. You know, he's good in a lot of different ways. And yeah, I like to see, I love that leap off the buckle with the back elbow.
Yeah.
That was the thing that he used to do quite frequently as a babyface as well.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. That's a cool one. So, and then Credible teases a tombstone. Storm tries to reverse it, but then ends up getting a Northern Lights suplex for two. Then he tries a vertical suplex, but Credible gets out of it, and it's a nice superkick for two.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them are slow to get up. Dawn Marie, again, not afraid to pound on the mat very hard to help her man. Then Credible gets a chair and sits it up and then slams Storm's head on it, gets a two, then goes for a body press off the top, but Storm rolls through for two. They end up reversing each other's abdominal stretches, and that turns into Storm hip-tossing Credible into the table that's on the ramp, set up on the ramp. Then he drags him in, but only gets two.
Now that runway, I'll have you know, Joey Styles informed me that that runway has no give whatsoever.
Yes. Well,
I also I'd like to point out that I really like that setup. Japan uses that setup a lot. You don't see it in the U.S. very much anymore.
I do too. I do like the runway. I think that's a cool thing. WCW had that for a while too. Like in the 92 through 94 ish era. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily need it all the time, but I like it sort of as a different setup. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think so to clarify for the listeners who may not have watched this match and might not know what we're talking about, what we're saying is that the entrance ramp goes all the right up to the it's the same height as the ring and goes right up to the ring.
Right.
So rather than like WWE's goes slopes down to the floor and then they go to the ring and they get in the ring, the ramp goes from the entryway straight out and directly to the ring. So
Exactly.
And again, I'm a fan, so.
Indeed. So Storm gets the half crab, but Francine steps in and interferes. Dawn Marie jumps in and they do a cat fight, which is pretty much a staple of ECW, I would say.
Yeah, it's pretty awful. They roll around and shake their hair around and
yeah, and you get to see their underwear a little bit. So
you get to see their butts, right? So yeah, that's
so
a thing.
It's a thing, you know. Mm-hmm. And then Credible
then
pulls
Justin
Dawn Marie off
and
hits her with a tombstone. So okay, there you go. Yep. And some officials come to pull her out of the ring. Storm ends up nailing Credible with a cane, hits him with a traditional pile driver, a good one, and that only gets two. Then he tries to set up the tombstone, but then Credible flips over and does his own, which also gets two. The ref's count gets to seven. They end up both up on their knees and punching each other. Then they stand up, and Credible gets a running DDT for two. Credible tries a double underhook, but then Storm gets the slingshot. He tries the sunset flip, but then Credible holds him down for a good near fall. And then we finish off with Storm trying to get to the top, but Credible crotching him on top. Then he picks him up off the turnbuckle, gets him in the tombstone position, and then hits it for three. So, yeah, you know, thinking more about this match, I would have to say, you know, I thought this was actually pretty good. Like, I agree that they had some nice spots. It was a pretty good athletic showcase. I mean, it was nothing groundbreaking, but as far as, you know, a good, solid 12, 13-minute match, you know, between two guys, it was enjoyable. I have to say that I thought it was pretty fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a decent match. And then, so after the match, Tommy Dreamer does come and make an appearance, which was, you know, as a fan, was nice to see. He doesn't really do much. He just comes and he hits Credible with the cane, right? And then Francine, you know, tries to beg off, and of course, then Dreamer just grabs her and hits her with a Spicoli driver.
Right. and the crowd erupts. They go insane for that, yeah. But before that, though, Francine polishes the belt instead of
That's right. She polishes the belt and puts it down in front of Tommy Dreamer. That's right.
Right. She polishes it, and then Styles says she cares more about that than Credible, not going to check on Credible and make sure he's okay. And then the Dreamer does the run, and they do all that. So, it kind of interesting. Misogynism in wrestling is kind of a big story the week that we're recording this because of the sort of an infamous segment where John Cena does a little bit of slut shaming, as it's called, on Eve. Kind of a weird story there. But this kind of puts that in perspective, I have to say, as far as the misogyny level.
The thing about that is the problem I have with the thing that happened on Raw this week is that it was just badly scripted, badly executed, badly done all around.
And out of nowhere.
Right.
Nothing to set up the, you know, other than like a really clumsy thing in the beginning where Eve randomly reveals her master plan to the Bellas for absolutely no reason other than exposition to the audience, and then is caught by John Cena. And so on and so forth. Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of badly things executed. I mean, at least this was like a story that was set up, and in the story, you can make the argument that Francine, you know, deserves it. You know, whether it, you know, it's not really, you know, necessarily good for to have a position where a man, you know, doing something pretty violent to a woman is considered good to a crowd, but from a, you know, if you take the morality or whatever out of it, at least it was a story that, you know, that is set up well, and you know, this is a somewhat of a payoff to that,
right.
Or at least another step into it.
I mean, so I'll start by saying no person should watch professional wrestling and use that as their moral compass.
Sure.
Nobody should say Tommy Dreamer dropped Francine on her head with a Spicoli driver, so it's okay that if my, you know, if my wife doesn't get me a beer, it's okay for me to give her a Spicoli driver.
Yes.
That's horribly misguided and terrible and wrong. But the problem with the Eve thing was that it came out of nowhere. The story was really not very good to begin with. Like the whole Kane thing could exist fine on its own without the Eve and Zack Ryder, and the Zack Ryder stuff was okay, but like the Eve thing didn't make any sense. The thing where she got into the ambulance for no reason didn't make any sense. The thing where she kissed John Cena didn't make any sense. The thing where all of a sudden it was a ploy to, like, just it was sloppily written. It didn't make any sense, and it made her look like an idiot. And then for John Cena to say, "You're a dirty slut," when in fact she hadn't had sex with anybody.
Right. And he was, like, and he was as responsible for kissing her as she was for kissing
right.
him.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. It's right. It's like the cherry on the bullshit sundae. It's just that whole segment of him. And then like she was doing something that was unscrupulous, but having the whole thing is a train wreck. Like, it's a train wreck from a creative point. It's a train wreck from the point of Eve's character, because there's nowhere to take her character now. It's a train wreck from the point of John Cena, because he's now, like, that is horrible. And at least Francine had a long and standing history of being unscrupulous, conniving, you know, she would do anything to keep the title on her charge, and she cheated, not sexually, but she cheated in matches a lot, and she would hit people with things and distract the referee and do all that stuff. So again,
I think I lost you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I hit my mute button on accident.
Oh, okay.
I wouldn't take anything that happens in professional wrestling as a tacit consent for violence against women, of course. But in this context of the storyline, like, she had it coming. You know what I mean? Like, I get it. And it made sense, at least in terms of the story of she had been doing awful things, screwing over Credible's opponents, keeping the belt on Credible when he hadn't earned it, all that kind of stuff. And so she got a Spicoli driver for her trouble, and the crowd popped for it.
Right.
The Eve thing is just it's a train. We talk all night about the Eve thing and how bad. The bottom line about the Eve thing is it was not only was it in poor taste, it was poorly written. It was the whole angle is a train wreck from Jump Street, and they ruined her character for any future use at this point, because essentially she's now been exposed for what she allegedly is, in terms of being unscrupulous, conniving, willing to use sex as a tool to get ahead. And like, it's just any babyface who trusts her is an idiot. And the whole thing with Cena and the skank juice and the diseases thing and the
right.
This just is bad. This is bad. The whole thing is bad.
She'll team up with a heel, and then that heel feud with Zack Ryder is probably what's going to happen.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Yeah. They'll transfer the heat over to that heel, and then Zack Ryder will get his revenge, you know, or whatever.
Why would the heel trust her?
Well, because heels are stupid. Because it'll be some sex starved heel who, you know, is happy to have a hot girlfriend,
I guess. I don't
know. So Jack Swagger, maybe, you know, that kind of thing. But
he doesn't need Eve. He's got Vicky. Vicky is taking his career to new heights.
Well, you know, maybe, you know, I don't know. And nothing we need to talk about. But one thing I do want to talk about is Lance Storm after this in WCW, which I get the feeling you didn't watch much WCW at this point. But I was quite a huge fan of Lance Storm's first couple of months in WCW. I mean, he really was kind of a breath of fresh air, just was pushes like a killer and won a bunch of matches cleanly with submissions and was unifying titles and was just kind of like randomly badass for a couple of months. And then they just sort of gave him a lame stable and had Kevin Nash randomly powerbomb him for no reason, and then, you know, kind of entered it pretty quickly. But for a while, he actually was pretty hot in WCW and was kind of like the last cool thing they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, they did their best to make Storm a legitimate, almost a successor to Chris Benoit in that way.
Yeah, right.
But then they screwed it up.
Right.
And the whole Team Canada thing, and then there was the Misfits in Action, and that whole angle, and then things just went down the toilet from there.
Right.
When he got to WWE, they did a lot of good things with, again, they did good things with him at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then he was doing a Cabbage Patch.
Right.
For some reason.
Yeah.
And they, when you say, when the guy's gimmick is that he's boring, like, that's, you could make it work, but they didn't.
I think he's even said that, like, you know, it had a good idea behind it, but they never followed through on it. They lost interest, and then, you know, so on and so forth. But
right.
Yeah.
But you know, if I could be serious for a moment, that is one of my favorite Lance Storm isms, is the "if I could be serious for a moment" promos that he cut. So
yeah, I like Lance. I think he was pretty good. You not like necessarily like outstanding, but you know, he's a very good guy. He had some good stuff. I mean, he had a good career. Seems like he's in a good place, and you know, obviously has his school and is, you know, is fairly active in commentary and does a lot of cool things. So good for him. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's wrestling in a Ring of Honor show WrestleMania weekend, apparently. So.
Yeah, I think Mike gets Mike Bennett. So
yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So
yeah, he's one of those guys. He's just a very capable. He's not the most charismatic guy in terms of his ability on the mic and that kind of thing. But the "if I can be serious for a minute" promos worked. He sounds confident enough on the mic. He doesn't stumble over his words or, you know, anything like that. But he's very solid in the ring. He's very similar to Sean Morley in that way, or you know, Val Venus.
Right.
Basically, if you get in the Val Venus had a great role in WWE for a while, where basically they would put, you know, they'd give guys tryout matches and have them wrestle Val Venus, because if Val Venus can't make you look good, you can't be made to look good. And essentially, I would say the same thing goes for Lance Storm. If you put a guy who doesn't know what he's doing in the ring with Lance Storm and let him, you know, just have a match and let Lance Storm call the match and guide the young guy, the green guy along, he's going to have a good match unless he's actively terrible.
Right.
Like, you know, and you know, as a teacher, I'm sure he's a great teacher. Obviously, I haven't interacted with him in that capacity or anything, so I wouldn't know. But I would imagine, based on everything that I've read that he's written, based on, you know, having seen his matches, I have no doubt that that Lance Storm is an exceptionally capable teacher of professional wrestlers.
So. Sure. All right, Joe. Well, would you like to mention some of the things that you've got going on?
Oh man, I would. I always would. So this is being recorded at the end of February, which means that next month, when this, I don't know how long it's going to be until this goes up, but if it goes up, you know, late next week, it's going to be March. March is, of course, WrestleMania month, which means WrestleMania week on the Stick is coming up on thestick.com every year. Well, we've only done it for 1 year because we've only been a site for 1 year. But during WrestleMania week, there's all kinds of stuff that's related to video games and wrestling. Usually at that point, there will be a special action cast, which you can find it on thestick.com/actioncast for WrestleMania week on the Stick. But more than that, a thing I'm really excited about now is that we are doing a wrestling podcast on thestick.com now. And you can find that at whatamaneuver.onthestick.com. The first episode is not up as of this recording, but it's going to be up very soon. It'll probably go up, I would say, probably Saturday, if not before. So it should be up either by the time this goes up or shortly after. And what's going on is Eric Allen and myself from onthestick.com are going through the entire year of 1996 of Raw and Nitro. We're doing two episodes of each at the beginning until we catch up with where we're at in the current calendar year. And then we will be shadowing the year, on down of 1996 and what happened in wrestling that week in 1996. So we got through the first 2 weeks of Raw and Nitro on our debut episode, which again will be up at whatamaneuver.onthestick.com very shortly.
Cool. Well, I just subscribed to the RSS feed while you were doing that plug. So.
All right. Excellent. So yeah, that's 1996 is a watershed year in professional wrestling. It's essentially the year in which the professional wrestling changes forever in a way that it probably will never go back to how it was before that. And we discussed that at length on the show on the first episode. But essentially, we're talking about you see the NWO for the first time. You see Stone Cold Steve Austin debut in WWE, actually as the ringmaster. We cover that in this week's show because that happened right away in January. You know, you see sort of the transition of the television shows from jobber matches to more main event type big marquee matches between, you know, big stars and all kinds of stuff. So it's exciting. It's an exciting project. We're super excited about it. And those will be going up weekly to shadow, you know, the year and to see. Compare. You can compare what you saw in Raw this week with what happened in 1996 in the same week. So we're excited about that.
Well, sounds great. We're really very excited about that. And of course, you know, you have of course on the stick.com, ActionCast. You're on Twitter as well, of course.
That's right. I'm on Twitter. You can follow my ramblings and insanities on Twitter at @shake_well. I hope you like video games and pro wrestling, or at least are amused by watching someone tweet about it constantly, because that's what you're going to get if you follow me on Twitter. And of course, I also write for FairToFlare.com and for the Fair to Flare quarterly magazine on occasion. So those are things that if you're listening to this, I probably don't have to mention that, but I did.
Well, we appreciate those contributions, of course. And thank you very much for being on the show. And everyone, thanks again for checking us out. And we'll be back with another show another time.